All right. Welcome to the Free Stretch here on JoeBucksFan.com. Brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. It is the week 6 edition of the show as the Bucks are now off the bye week. And we've got them all lined up right there in front of us now. 12 in a row, all on Sundays, all on 1 p.m. Flex scheduling not pending. And these next 12 games are going to determine, obviously, what happens in the 2018 season. But more than that, it feels like a lot about the direction of the franchise is on the line here over these next 12 games for many reasons. And we will talk about that here today on the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford, Tampa's first family of Ford, proud to announce a nationwide lifetime warranty on new and pre-owned vehicles. This includes unlimited years, unlimited miles, plus 10-year roadside assistance, and 1 year of complimentary service. All that and more, you can see all the details at BillCurryFord.com. You can go down there in person and see Sean Sullivan. He's the new general manager at Bill Curry Ford. He will give you, and they will give you, a Joe Bucks fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing plus the new lifetime warranty. Like, if you go over there and just say, oh yeah, hey, Joe Bucks fan, heard about you guys on Joe Bucks fan, that's all you have to say. Say my name, say the name of the Free Stretch, refer to the Joes, just refer to Joe Bucks fan, and you're going to get the extra discount. And Bill Curry Ford has proudly been serving the Tampa community for 58 years now. They're located just north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. You can go there and check it out, or you can start shopping even sooner than that if you go to the website at BillCurryFord.com. So thank you to them, and thank you to all of you for joining us today. I got a fun show planned. First things first, if you want to get a hold of me, you know how to do it. I'm very easy to access. My email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's BobbyGameday at yahoo.com. On Twitter, at bobbygameday. And if you want to get ready for Sunday, first thing I want to tell you about, I know Justin was talking about it on his show, just like they had the draft party at Buffalo Wild Wings in South Tampa back in April, they're having a big party there this Sunday for the game. So if you're thinking, hey, I need some atmosphere to this one, this one's a big one. Bucks are 2-2, despite how bad it feels because they've lost 2 in a row. They're right there in the thick of things. It's early in the NFC, but you want to have an atmosphere. You're like, you know what? This one, I don't want to sit at home alone on the couch. Go to Buffalo Wild Wings, Southdale Mabry, actually not right across from Britton Plaza, if you know South Tampa at all, and there'll be the stick carriers there. Justin will be there. There'll be a whole bunch of action. I'm thinking about heading over there myself. I got a little league thing with my kid early in the day, but it shouldn't get in the way of this. So there's going to be atmosphere there. It's going to be a lot of fun, food, drink, all that stuff. And, you know, Justin always brings it with the stuff he sets up. It's always great. Go check that out. This is a big game on Sunday we're looking ahead to. And coming off the bye week with the Buccaneers, and like I said last week on the show, you know, you don't usually want to have the bye week too early, but this week it felt just about right because of what happened in Chicago and a chance for the Bucks to kind of lick their wounds and get reset. And now you've got a team, actually you've got two teams, with the two worst defenses by most metrics that you have in the NFL. If you go to expected points allowed or expected points gained or any of those analytical numbers or, you know, yards per play, this, that, and the other, what you got right now is basically teams 31 and 32 on defense. And the Falcons have their own issues. You know, we think the sky is falling. We had a whole show last week about how the Bucks are the same old Bucks and they're not going anywhere and we need to fire Mike Smith and we suck and blah, blah, blah. Well, the Falcons are 1-4. They have given up 37 points 3 games in a row for the first time in their franchise history going back to 1987 was the last time. So that's just the whole team. They haven't done this as a franchise since 1987. 37 points, 3 games in a row. It's only happened one time in one game, 37 points given up by the Falcons in the Dan Quinn era before this. That was in Quinn's first year of 2015. But now they've given it up 3 games in a row. They lose to the Steelers this past weekend on the road and get thumped pretty good while doing it. And so, you know, if you looked at the most disappointing teams in the NFL through, what have we had, 5 weeks now. I mean, the Falcons and the Eagles, the two teams that opened the season on that Thursday night in Philadelphia and who played in the divisional round of the playoffs last year, would probably be at the top of the list. Philly is 2-3. The Falcons are 1-4. Neither of them has looked very good. And so they're in disarray, just like we are. They've got injuries just like we do, especially on the defense, although Devontae Freeman looking to be out again for this one. So Tevin Coleman will probably carry most of the load at running back. That's been the case for a good part of the year for the Falcons, so nothing new there. Matt Ryan got dinged a little bit after getting sacked, I think it was 6 times against the Steelers. And he was at practice this week, no problem there. As for the Buccaneers, injuries don't look too bad. Obviously, you've got O.J. Howard. You got Jordan Whitehead, who had full participation. In fact, for practice, the Buccaneers had all 53 members of their 53-man roster practicing the full 2 hours on Thursday in some capacity. Some guys were limited, some guys were full go, but they were all out there. Nobody's just completely on the shelf. So we'll see about, you know, Bo Allen, if he'd get back in there with Vita Vea, it'd be the first time they'd be side-by-side. Obviously, Whitehead being back in is huge because the Bucs need all the help in the secondary they could possibly get. O.J. Howard, I don't think will play this week, but I'm just saying that. That's not a report, and I could be wrong by the time you tune into this podcast. But that's the way the injury situation looks right now. The bye week did serve the Bucs pretty well. And, of course, another guy we've got coming back, although it's not an injury, and I know he played a little bit in the Bears game, but he's truly back now, is Jameis Winston. So, you know, this is the start of what I think, and I've said many times on this show already, but what I think is going to be the defining memory of the 2018 season, beyond what just, you know, could with the wins and losses, whether they make the playoffs or they don't, or whether they have a winning record or they don't. This is going to be the 12 games that determined where we went as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And I said all along, even through the whole Fitzmagic thing, and, you know, people love the trendy stuff, people love the fads. Now, what Fitzpatrick did on the field was not trendy or a fad. It was flat-out good performance. And quite honestly, as we said last week, he does not deserve to not keep starting just based on his play, even though, obviously, things didn't go quite as well in Chicago and during the first half of the Pittsburgh Monday night game a few weeks back. You take the whole body of work, and Fitzpatrick is well ahead of most starting quarterbacks in the NFL. All of them, I'm saying. In that group, he's right up there with the top ones. But it's not his team. It never was his team. We got to figure out if it's going to be Jameis' team going forward, and now's the time to do that. And, you know, if nothing else, I think the game in Chicago really just provided a convenient excuse to go to Jameis, whereas if the Bucs had lit it up and Fitzpatrick had kept lighting it up and they come back and win that Pittsburgh game, and let's say they win that Chicago game in a hypothetic alternate universe, you know, they're 4-0 right now and Fitzmagic is doing his thing and he's funning and gunning, there would be no way you could not stay with him. There just wouldn't be. And I'm not saying I'm glad it worked out the way it did, because I'd rather be 4-0 and having a quarterback controversy, to be honest with you. But any reason that the Bucs administration, whether it's Dirk Koetter to Jason Light to the Glazers themselves, any reason they could have that would give them cover to make this move, you know, they were going to take advantage of. And it sucks what happened in Chicago, but if nothing else, you know, it leads to this now. And it's Jameis Winston's team. And he's only one guy. Obviously, he's more important than any other one guy. But he doesn't play defense. He doesn't play special teams. And he doesn't throw and catch on offense. He's going to have a chance now over these 12 games to set himself up for a big contract, basically set the tone for the remainder of his career. And the Bucs are either going to be one of those teams, and this is the biggest part here, okay, folks, because I don't care what anybody says, and you already know this, and I already know this, but there's, again, 5 to 10 guys in the whole world walking the face of the planet who are qualified to be that guy, quarterback for their NFL team, and I not just the 32 starting quarterbacks, but I mean the 5 to 10 guys who are like, yeah, this guy. Like, we're going to build a team around this guy. We wouldn't trade this guy for anybody else in the league except for maybe one of the other 5 to 10 guy. Like, this is our guy. Like, how many franchises can say that? There's 32 of them, and less than a third of them probably could say that. Okay? So, you've got your Aaron Rodgerses of the world and Tom Brady's, and you've got now Patrick Mahomes, who I love in Kansas City, and he appears to be one of those guys too. And you've got, you know, your Roethlisbergers, even Joe Flacco. He's having a little bit of a resurgence with the Ravens. Point is, Drew Brees. How could I leave Drew Brees out? Of course, breaking the record this past Monday night. That was cool to watch. Hats off to him. You got those types of teams that are like, yep, we got our guy. That we're good. Those are the teams that show up in the playoffs every year. Those are the teams that win in the playoffs every year. Those are the teams that are there at the end. And then you've got the Bucks, who are either at the end of this season going to be one of those other teams who's got no idea what the hell they're going to try and do. Or we could be one of those teams. Jameis locked up, signed to a long-term deal, getting his money, great, driver's seat, face of the franchise, on and on and on. And we can pretend, well, not in favor of pretending things never happened, I shouldn't say that. It can be as if all this other stuff never happened. Or it'll be so far in the rearview mirror, nobody will care anymore. And I don't mean that to be cavalier toward the Uber driver or to any of the people in college or any. I'm not trying to defend Jameis off the field right now. I'm talking strictly football. Over these next 12 games, if he does what he can do, what we think he can do, then he can be set up as a franchise quarterback, and the Bucs moving forward can be set up as a franchise to annually compete for playoff spots and for Super Bowls. We hope. Now, again, he's not in a vacuum. Even if he's really good, the Bucs can't do those things I just said. They can't compete for playoff spots annually, and they can't compete for Super Bowls with a defense like the one they've shown so far. But you can do absolutely nothing as a franchise if you're, you know, just messing around with different quarterbacks, bringing in middle-aged guys on their third or fourth team, trying to figure out who it's going to be. You know, that doesn't work. You need a guy that you grew, you drafted, he's your guy, and there's no question about it. And that's how it works in the NFL. So Jameis has a chance to be that guy now. The Bucs' passing offense certainly looks as if a competent quarterback should be able to run it well interchangeably. If you don't believe that it was really just Fitzpatrick doing those things, if you think Jameis can perform up to that same level, and I do, through 5 weeks, this is Thomas Bassinger, always coming up with the numbers. Love Thomas Bassinger of the Tampa Bay Times. I mentioned him at least once a show. But he wrote an article this week about here are the reasons why Jameis can really come in and start being successful right away. Through 5 weeks, this is the NFL as a whole, 60.6% of all plays have been passing plays. All right, 39.4% have been running plays. If that keeps up, it would be the highest proportion of passing plays to running plays in the history of the NFL. It's always been a passer's league. I shouldn't say always, but it's always in the recent past been a passer's league, but an offense's league. They've been doing more and more things with the rules every year. They just keep making it easier and easier for offense. That trend is exponentially growing this year. So they're calling more passing plays all over the league than they ever have before, and the Bucs are even ahead of the league average, the league average being 60.6%. The Bucs are at 63.5% pass plays called compared to 36.5% run percent. So they're almost at two-thirds of the time they throw the ball, which is good. You should be doing that. You look at Jameis Winston's career record, you see 18-27, and you see last season he was 3-10. You think, this is the guy you're talking about, Bobby? You really want to go and just put all your eggs in this guy's basket even before you get to the off-field stuff? Look at those numbers. And again, I mean, we obviously need to mitigate all that with the performance of other parts of the team that Winston has nothing to do with. But if you want to get into the deep numbers, Football Outsiders, who they get into the numbers too, they're analytical. They had Jameis last season, even while going 3-10 as a starter, at 14.3% above league average. Basically just taking the play of every quarterback who played in an NFL game and put up numbers of any kind last season, Jameis was, again, 14% above the midline. The midline would be average. He led the league with over 40% of his passes being completed for first downs. The Bucs as a team this year, which is mostly Fitzpatrick but a little bit of Winston against Chicago, are at 44%, which is also good, second in the league this year to the Rams. But again, Jameis Winston completed more of his passes for a first down than Tom Brady, than Drew Brees, than Roethlisberger. All these other guys last year led everybody while going 3-10 as a starter. Sorry about that. Dropped my pen. And I don't think you can overstate how crippling having a bad defense and bad special teams was to the Bucs last year. It's obvious to all of us who watched the games, and we're watching them again now, and the Bucs are 2-2 in spite of that defense not being much better, it doesn't appear. The point is, Jameis was good last year, whether you realize it or not or want to admit it or not, despite the Bucs not being good last year. And the league is only getting more and more favorable to quarterbacks this year. He can come in here now and put up huge numbers. And it might not even necessarily be because he's so much better, but just keeping pace with what's going on around the league. You know, this Bucs offense can move the ball. We've seen that. And there's no reason to believe Jameis can't come in his 12 games and keep doing the same thing. And I'm not saying that to take anything away from Fitzpatrick. It's not going to be easy to duplicate what he did in those two games. And you don't have to, hopefully. And the main thing I want to stress, and this is the thing that we've harped on before, and if you watch the games, the Bucs continue to do better, and I have to believe Dirk Koetter knows this, when they are aggressive. And this is, again, a league-wide thing, not just with the Bucs. The 10 teams who passed the ball the most in the first quarter only so far this season, the 10 teams that lead that category, passing ratio, call more pass plays than run plays, the 10 teams that do it the most have a 6.04 winning percentage so far this season in the NFL. Then you've got the 10 teams that throw the ball the least in the first quarter, the ones that try to, quote, establish the run or set a tone or whatever gobbledygook, supposedly macho, inspirational crap you want to call running the ball over and over and not getting all that many yards. The 10 teams that run the ball the most in the first quarter have a winning percentage of 4.67. And we've seen the Bucs offense time and again, when they throw on first down, get more first downs and score points on those drives. And on down sets of downs and drives where they are more apt to run on first down, things don't get done quite as well, do they? Now, against Chicago last week, and this is the other side of the equation, you can't get down that big that early because now you're throwing against a defense that knows you're going to throw, and that changes everything. But the biggest advantage you have on first down in a game where you're not trailing by a million already is that first down you can call any play. The defense has to defend the pass and the run. They don't have to defend the run on third and eight, and that changes your passing success rate. So hopefully the Bucs with Jameis stay aggressive and get out there and throw the ball. And you saw no better example of the overall mentality of being aggressive than two games last week. And I wanted to talk about this on the show today. Again, email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. And on Twitter, I'm @BobbyGameDay. Fortune favors the bold. And I think it's a mentality thing because we still equate being bold with being risky, and it's not the same thing. And we equate punting in short yardage situations as, quote, playing it safe and going for it as rolling the dice. See, this is terminology that has to be taken out of these conversations. It's the biggest problem, I think, with analyzing just as a whole what football coaches should be doing and not doing in certain game situations and game theory and all that. But the problem is we still frame these things improperly, in my opinion. When you punt the ball on fourth and one on the other side of the 50-yard line, like in the other team's territory, you are putting your team at risk of not scoring as many points as you would otherwise if you went for it. But people don't look at it that way. They say, oh, let's not take a risk, let's punt as if that's safe. No, that's the risky thing. You're giving the ball away for free, and you're passing up a play in which you have a huge mathematical advantage. Two games I'm talking about last week, you probably already know what I mean. You got the Dallas Cowboys on Sunday night taking on the Houston Texans. It's tied. They're in overtime, and thanks to the stupid new overtime rule of cutting it down to 10 minutes, the clock is ticking. We're looking at possibly having a tie game. But the Cowboys have the ball in Houston territory. I think they were on the Houston 42 or something like that. They were on the other side of the 50. I know that much. There's about 5 minutes left in overtime. It's fourth and one. And Jason Garrett, afraid that if he goes for it and doesn't get it, that Houston will get the ball and drive, you know, whatever, 25 yards or what have you, and go score and win the game themselves, says, oh, let's play it safe. Let's punt. Fourth and one with Ezekiel Elliott. Do you know, by the way, what the Cowboys' percentage is on going forward on fourth down the past two seasons and this season going into that play on Sunday night? They got the first down 19 out of 20 times going for it on fourth down the past couple years. And Jason Garrett was on the sidelines for all 20 of those attempts. And again, has Ezekiel Elliott and says, you know what? I mean, this would be a bad call in regulation with lots of time left. He basically guaranteed his team would not win the game, because even if they don't, even if they stop Houston, they're probably not going to have enough time to go score. Like, you're basically saying, I'm going to take a tie here at best, and at worst, we're going to lose. Like, that's actually basically what he did. He said, you know what? I'm going to forego any chance of winning the game. I'm going to punt, and we might lose, but we could tie. So he punts the ball. It takes Houston. One of my favorite things to do, by the way, next time a team punts when they shouldn't, next time a team has short yardage in front of them, and they don't want to go get it, instead they want to try and punt, count how many plays it takes the receiving team on the punt to cross the spot on the field that the punting team was so afraid they'd give them the ball on to begin with. Because Houston crossed the point on the field where Dallas punted from, I think, in about four or five play. So, you're so scared. Field position's such a big deal from you. Hey, let's give them the ball on the 8 instead of the 42. Like, that's... I should have looked up. I forgot where the punt landed, but assuming it was a pretty good punt that got inside the 10, let's call it the 7-yard line instead of the 42. That's 35 yards of field position. That's nothing to scoff at. But you gave up 35 yards of field position in this day and age in the NFL, when people can get 35 yards in the blink of an eye, and you gave up those 35 yards, or you wanted to keep those 35 yards just so you would not have any chance of winning the game. It was that important to you. I mean, that's... If I was Jerry Jones, and I don't like Jerry Jones, but if I was Jerry Jones, or if I was any NFL owner up in my booth watching the game, and my head coach punted on 4th and 1 from the other team's 42 with only 5 minutes to go in overtime, when 6 or 7 more yards, at worst, you can probably win the game yourself, and if you know any more than that, you're in really good field goal range. I would need to be restrained, like my people, you know, whoever these owners have working for them, or my wife or somebody would have to physically restrain me from getting on the elevator or just running down the stadium steps and firing the coach on the sideline at the end of the game, like making a whole scene in front of the TV cameras, because that's what I'd want to do. And Jerry Jones did call Jason Garrett out publicly, and I'm glad that he did. I mean, Jason Garrett's clearly getting fired when the season's over anyway, but I'm glad he did, because that was terrible. And I don't dislike Jason Garrett, but I thought that was quite frankly embarrassing by an NFL head coach, and you don't deserve to be working in the league if you make a call that bad. And if you're a Dallas Cowboys player, whether you're on that offensive line or whether you're Ezekiel Elliott or whether you're the defense or whoever, and you're standing there and your coach does that, I don't know what you're thinking, but I'm certainly thinking, let me not get hurt the final 12 games and collect my paychecks and get out of here and try to put something on film for the next head coach. I am in no way inspired. In no way do I want to put anything of my own on the line for that guy at the head coaching spot. It's a terrible mentality. It's a terrible strategy, just the very nuts and bolts of it. But psychologically and emotionally, it's terrible in those aspects as well. Then you go and you look at a guy like Sean McVay with the Rams. They were in even more, if you want to call it, risky position. They were leading their game by 2 points with a minute 39 to go, and they were on their own 42, not the other team's 42. So if they go for it and miss, the Seahawks, who they were playing against, would need about, again, you know, 5-10 yards. Hauschka's pretty good, their kicker. 5-10 yards, they're kicking for the win, and the Rams lose. And you could actually kind of justify punting for Sean McVay. Like, I would have disagreed with it, but I wouldn't have crucified him. Like, with Jason Garrett, it was just indefensible. I can't believe he did that. But with McVay, to see him go out there, and again, it's 4th and 1, and he actually was going to punt. I don't want to completely, you know, anoint him as Christ-like or something, because he was going to punt too, and then only because Seattle called a timeout, moronically, did they give him a chance to think it over even more, and then he sent his offense back out there. They go and get the first down, and the game's over, and they win. And I loved it. I mean, first of all, forget about all the rah-rah stuff about being aggressive. Just purely statistically, what gives you a better chance to win? 4th and 1. You know, the problem is people think of these 4th and 1s as a coin flip. Like, what if we don't get it? Yeah, you might not get it, but it's hardly a coin flip. 4th and 1s are picked up more than 80% of the time in the NFL. And if you can't factor that in as a head coach, you need to think a little harder. So think about being the opponent. Like, whenever you're kind of on the fence about what should we do here, think about it from the opponent's perspective and what would they hope you would do. If you're Seattle, it's 4th and 1. There's a minute 39 left. You need a field goal to win. You're thinking, oh, man, if they punt this, you know, we get the ball back. We have a chance here. You're thinking, I really hope they don't go for it, because if they go for it, they'll probably get it. Like, in deep down in the recesses of your mind, you're thinking, please punt. Please help us and give us the ball back, which is exactly why you don't punt. You do go for it. And if you saw the game, you saw they get the first down. Jared Goff sneaked it. And the Rams celebrated that first down, which essentially ended the game. I mean, the bounce they had in their step, they were jumping all over each other. Excuse me, jumping all over each other. I mean, it was really emotional for them. You could tell. And Sean McVay said after the game, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, how can I sit here and preach aggressiveness? How can I sit here and preach high energy and all the things we try to encourage our players to be and all the things we try to encourage our players to do? How can I preach that and then punt on 4th and less than a yard with the game on the line? No, we're going to go get that yard. We're going to win the game. And that's going to be that. And that's what they did. And the Rams are 5-0. And I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl or anything like that. I don't know what they're going to do or how the future goes. But with a guy like that in charge, I mean, that from the top down permeates the entire team. And you better believe those guys will put it on the line for him and for that team. And you better believe those guys do trust him and do want to play for him. Fortune favors the bold. And again, I think it would have been riskier for the Rams. I think the Rams would have been taking a huge risk to punt there, because you're giving a team that can beat you with a field goal and a good field goal kicker the ball back when you don't have to. You know, 4th and 5, okay, fine. 4th and less than a yard? Go get it. That's like having a 3-foot putt and saying, you know what? Instead of me taking this 3-foot putt, I'm going to let you take a 10-foot putt to beat me. Would you sit there and watch someone attempt a 10-foot putt to beat you if you could end it with a 3-foot putt yourself? This is a hypothetical. It's not how golf works, but I'm saying, hypothetical, you got a 3-foot putt. Are you going to take the putt yourself and end it? Or are you going to wait for the other guy to take his 10-footer? I wouldn't sit there and watch that 10-footer. I'm making my 3-footer and we're getting the hell out of here. Jason Garrett's the type of guy that's going to watch the 10-footer. And he shouldn't be the Cowboys head coach because of that. And Sean McVay is a stud, and he's the envy of every other team in the league right now. And he should be. So think of it in those terms. And this is what I know that it's a Bucs podcast, but those two plays and those two games stood out to me this week. And it does tie into the Bucs, because being aggressive is, especially with the type of defense they have, one of the best things they have going for them. It's been borne out by the numbers. It's not just a rah-rah thing, like I said. The Bucs have had success this season so far when they've been aggressive, and they've had less success when they haven't been. If you're Dirk Cutter, you're openly coaching for your job. He's even said it out loud. We all know it. And I know when you're coaching for your job, your instinct maybe is to try and protect, but you got to attack. That's his best chance to be the coach here in 2019. And it's Jameis Winston's best chance to have a successful year and be a franchise quarterback in 2019 and beyond. And like I said last week, my biggest concern, because these 12 games, as much as they are 12 games for the rest of the Bucs season, they're a 12-game audition for Jameis Winston as well. I don't want that audition skewed in any way. I don't want anything distorted. And I worry about our defense. This is what I worry about. I worry about our defense being so bad that it affects the way Jameis has to approach each individual series and doesn't give us a good enough picture of what kind of quarterback he is. Because he's, and any hit, not just him, anybody, he's a lot different quarterback when you're playing in a tie game or a one-score game as opposed to when you're playing down 2 or 3 touchdowns and trying to come back, which we've done way too much of in years past and, you know, have done again the past couple of weeks. So let's hope it doesn't come to that. But if it does, either way, what we have now, what the Bucs have now, is an opportunity. Because the Bucs, too, again, it felt real bad last week, like it, or you know, a week and a half ago, when they lost to the Bears, and we talked about, you know, same old Bucs, and this season's down the drain. And it's not. I mean, if the Bucs can win this game in Atlanta, and it's way too early to talk about playoffs or anything like that. I'm not trying to do that. But if they can win this game in Atlanta, they'll be 3-2. First of all, second of all, they'll be 2-0 in the division, and they'll be 2-0 on the road in the division. Okay, I mean, that's a big deal. And they put up a graphic on Twitter. I think it was Sunday Night Football, so it was like NBC's account. But they put up a graphic on Twitter this week of if the playoffs started today, here's how it would look, which is ridiculous to do in week six anyway. But the Bucks were right there. If the playoffs started today, the Bucks would be the third or the second wild card, the number six seed, and they'd be in at 2-2. Again, the playoffs don't start today. A million things will happen between now and then. But my point is, they put that graphic up there, and it kind of, you know, if nothing else, it kind of hit home, you know, it's an NFL season. Things are wacky and crazy every year. Things go zag when you think they'll go zig. And you could lose 48-10, and the next week you could look like an all-star team. Every week is its own week, every game is its own game, and nothing has any connection to what happened before. It seems that way. And so at 2-2, as bad as it felt against Chicago, it could be that good again against Atlanta. And I guarantee you, if they win that game at 3-2 and 2-0 in the division, we're going to feel like, oh, man, here we, you know. We'll feel like we've got Atlanta put away at 1-5, even though we wouldn't. And the Saints, you know, they're playing better in the past couple weeks, but the Bucs already beat them at the Superdome. So, you know, up is down is up, all that stuff. Just worry about the game in front of you, and this is a big one for the Bucs, and it's certainly a winnable one considering the Falcons' troubles on defense even before all the injuries, and now the injuries they are sustaining as well. So, with all those things in mind, the biggest thing I'll be watching for is the same thing we'll all be watching for this week, and that's Jameis as the starter. And I'm hoping when it's all said and done that there are no questions, no issues. As much as I love Fitzpatrick, I hope we don't hear his name that much during the broadcast. And it's just all about how Jameis is playing well and he's the unquestioned starter going forward and on and on and on. That's what I'm hoping for. Just for the good of the franchise. Like I said before, it's not about Jameis versus Fitz. It's about the good of the franchise. And I think that would be what's best for the franchise. It'd certainly be what's best for winning on Sunday. And we hope that happens. In the meantime, thanks to all of you. Like I said at the top of the show, if you want to get out and have some fun, whether it's just you on your own or a group of friends, Buffalo Wild Wings, Southdale Mabry, Justin's going to be there with the stick carriers on Sunday. The game will obviously be on all the big screens. There's plenty of food and drink to go around. It's going to be a great atmosphere if you want to get some atmosphere for this one. And I'm probably going to take my son over there. Look for the bald guy. I'm the bald guy with an oddly shaped head. If you see me, come say hello. I love meeting you guys in person. If you want to email me, love hearing from you that way too. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. And on Twitter, @BobbyGameDay. Thanks to the Joes for making this show possible, for giving me the chance to be on the best website for Bucks coverage and getting in front of all of you guys. Thanks to all of you for listening. And that is it. Have a safe weekend. We'll get ready for Sunday at 1 p.m. And in the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.